What's up, y'all? I got a dance deal for you, Chicago. Hubbard Street Dance heats up the Harris Theater stage with its spring series of joy next week. Now, this is some of the most dynamic, cutting-edge contemporary dance made by the world's leading choreographers right here in Chicago. I'm excited for Echoes of Our Ancestors by Maria Torres, among other creators. But you can only catch it for 3 performances between May 17th and May 19th. Luckily, CityCast Chicago listeners can get tickets in any section for 20% off using code CityCast online or over the phone. Visit HubbardStreetDance.com for details and use code CityCast. Today on CityCast Chicago, the Cook County State's Attorney race is not over just yet. The school board is changing the way schools are funded. And is anybody out here honeymooning near Chicago? No, not in Chicago, near Chicago. We're talking about it all with executive producer Simone Alisea. It's Tuesday, March 26th. I'm Jacoby Cochran, and this is What Chicago's Talking About. Morning, Simone. How you feeling?
Good morning, Jacoby. How are you?
I'm doing good. It's moving week, so I got a lot on my plate, but there are a lot of stories for us to talk about. And one big one is we are still talking election coverage. As most of the races have wrapped up, we've all got our eyes on the Cook County State's Attorney's race. As of this recording, just over 2,000 votes separate the candidates Eileen O'Neill Burke and Clayton Harris III. It obviously remains too close to call. Both are remaining, you know, very close to the ballot counting process, but they're holding their tongues. No one is taking a step forward, you know, as more ballots are being counted. Simone, what are your latest thoughts here? I mean, at any moment, things can change.
Yeah, I mean, sort of at any moment, right? with sort of the way this has been going down, right, is we have been getting updates every evening from the Chicago Board of Elections as more mail-in ballots are counted. We also are expecting updates from Cook County to get some, you know, those suburban mail-in votes to be counted as well. I think, yeah, I mean, this was on election night. Just as for context, you know, they were separated by something like 9,000 votes, almost 10,000 votes. And now to be, you know, it's interesting, like if you go and you look at like the bar graphs, it'll be like Clayton Harris III, 50%, Eileen O'Neill Burke, 50%. Like, that's how close this race is. Like, it is, it's really there. Both campaigns have sent poll watchers to observe the ballot processing as that continues. You know, poll watchers can't really do anything like while the count is happening, but in the event that one campaign wanted to file a lawsuit or wanted to demand a recount, having those poll watchers there just kind of helps set them up just in case something like that might happen. But for now, we just don't know. As you said, as of this recording on Monday morning, we're expecting maybe 3,500, 4,500 more ballots to be counted. But we kind of just we're just waiting and seeing at this point.
I don't want to get too far ahead of myself here, Simone, but we've covered not only what the Cook County State's Attorney's Office does, but how contentious of a position this has been over the last few people who have been the lead there, from campaigns to oust state's attorney to, you know, Kim Fox's office becoming a punching bag from both the police, but also the mayor's office at different times over her 2 terms. Coming into this race, obviously so many elections are very close percentage points, but one that is now, you know, dragging out for a week plus, where both candidates seemingly have, you know, a great shot at potentially winning. What do you think that means for how they're received as they come in, right? This is not an election they were able to confidently call the first night. This is not a position where either of them are going to be able to say, it is clear Cook County wants me, my leadership, my rhetoric, my agenda to lead this office forward. Obviously, they will be the leader. They'll be the authority. But do you think someone's, you know, maybe confidence is going to be shaken as they go into this office a little bit?
the reason we watched this race so closely was because we knew that sort of opinions were so divided on what the future of the state's attorney's office should be, right? What role should the state's attorney's office play in shaping Chicago's criminal legal system? You know, we are also seeing some of those differences start to appear in the geography of votes, especially as more mail-in ballots have come in Chicago, with suburban Cook County bolstering Eileen O'Neill Burke's candidacy. Eileen O'Neill Burke, a former state appellate justice who sort of came in as, I guess you could call her the more change candidate, you know, sort of pledging to be a little bit tougher on crime, versus the city of Chicago, where, especially after we've counted those mail-in ballots over the past week, has kind of swung to support Clayton Harris III. Now, again, those margins are still pretty small in both cases.
Yeah, we were at, what, 13,000 at one point, 10,000 at one point, 7,000, 5,000, right? That confidence that Burke may have had, even though the camp did not, you know, feel good to call the race, obviously, the night of or in the days after. But that has to be shrinking. And so I guess in some ways, I guess he might be feeling bolstered over these last few days.
Yeah, I don't know. I think it's tough to say. And I think, too, it's what we're also starting to see a little bit in this race. Right. We know that vote by mail has increased over the past few years due to the pandemic. Right. The city mm-hmm. and the county and the state, you know, have really started to push that as an option for folks. And I think they're taking advantage of it. This is kind of what happens when you have a big percentage of people who are voting by mail is sometimes it just kind of takes longer to really see things shake out. And you start to see two trends in. So when I used to cover elections in Washington State, which is an entirely vote by mail state, we often would say that late votes would break progressive. That was a trend that was true across our local elections there. We're starting to see that in this race happen as well, that some of these later votes are breaking toward Harris's campaign, who is sort of between the two of them was sort of seen as the more progressive candidate.
As we've been following these votes come in, one piece of confusion that happened was at one point the Chicago Board of Elections announced that they miscounted the number of ballots that they still had to go through. Am I understanding that correctly?
Yeah. So it's not a miscount, but numbers were misreported.
Okay.
So just to kind of pull that back the curtain a little bit for listeners, you know, in the days leading up to Election Day, reporters, journalists, campaigns, everybody and their mother is getting these emails from the Chicago Board of Elections updating us on a bunch of different numbers. One that people see is outstanding number of vote by mail ballots, the number of mail-in ballots that just haven't been returned yet. The Board of Elections hasn't even, right, they haven't seen them. They have not yet arrived. A second number that we get, particularly in the few days leading up to the election and the day before Election Day, is, you know, how many vote by mail ballots have arrived and are ready to be processed, ready to be counted. There was some. So what had happened was the Board of Elections reported a certain number of mail-in ballots that had arrived on Monday, on the day before Election Day, right? And then they're counting, right? So election night comes around. They also report the number of mail-in ballots received on Election Day by Dropbox and by mail. They're counting. And according to reports that I've read, it was actually the poll watchers for the Harris and O'Neill Burke campaigns that noticed that there actually seemed to be more ballots that election judges were counting than had been reported in these, you know, like I said, public
update emails,
these public reports that are coming out of the Board of Elections. And the Chicago Board of Elections spokesperson, Max Bever, came out and said that he had made an error in communicating the total number here, that, you know, there was sort of a group of ballots that had arrived late via USPS, via the post on Monday, that should have been counted in the Monday total, but wasn't. And then it wasn't added to the Election Day total. So there was sort of this pile of 9,000 or so votes that, again, the Board of Elections had already received. They were already secured. They were already sort of being ready to be processed, but it just wasn't reported out in the number. While I think this is confusing for people, particularly when you have such a close race and you're like, wait, did they just like find ballots on a floor somewhere? That's not what happened. The campaigns have come out and said, you know, that while this is frustrating, they trust the process and they're seeing a lot of transparency from the Board of Elections, and that they believe that, you know, as said, this is a communication error, not a counting error.
We will continue to follow this race as it gets closer and closer to certification day, which is April 2nd. You can follow along as well at chicago.citycast.fm, and make sure you subscribe to our daily newsletter, Hey Chicago, to get the latest in your inbox every morning, Monday through Friday. Are you self-conscious about your smile? Do you only allow yourself a closed mouth grin? Well, with Aligner Experts, there's no reason for you to diminish your smile. As orthodontists, they have the privilege of witnessing the remarkable transformation of patients' smiles, which often translates into a profound boost in their confidence. Yet, there always seems to be a deterrent. I ain't got the time, I don't have the funds. Luckily, Aligner Experts is redefining convenient and accessible clear aligner solutions. With customizable treatments, transparent pricing, and their cutting-edge 3D scanners and dental monitoring technology, you could transform your smile through the convenience of your own schedule. Stop in at their West Loop or Lakeview Clinic today for your complimentary smile assessment. Aligner Experts, your destination for advanced clear aligner solutions. P.S., they got another clinic on the way, so stay tuned for their Old Town location. In mostly non-election news, Mayor Brandon Johnson is still working to get his agenda on schools and housing through, despite the loss of the Bring Chicago Home referendum. First, let's talk about what happened at the school board meeting late last week. Simone, we've noted in previous conversations, one place where the mayor's agenda seems to be moving quickly and efficiently is in the Chicago school board. What's the latest there?
Yeah, so Chicago Public Schools voted on Thursday to do away with a system of funding schools based on enrollment. Basically, the more kids that are in the school, the more money you get. They said, no, what we're going to do instead is sort of fund a certain contingency of staff at all schools, and then schools that have additional needs will get additional funds. So for example, schools that have a high population of students with disabilities, things like that, that might prompt more funding to come. This is a really, really big deal in the realm of Chicago public schools. The enrollment-based funding formula has been in place since 2013, and it is, you know, critics have long argued that this funding formula,
it's a cycle of destruction. It slowly takes money from schools, which takes students from schools, which takes money from schools, students from schools. Now we close schools.
Right. Chicago Public Schools already struggles and has struggled with a lack of enrollment anyway, that enrollment numbers have gone down. And so the thought was that, you know, of course, schools that are able to attract more students, well, we should invest more in those. But again, as you point out, if you then disinvest in the schools that have fewer students, it makes students less likely and families less likely to want to go there and instead send their kid somewhere else. And so this move is actually a move back to the way CPS used to fund schools by saying, okay, every school is going to get an assistant principal. Every school is going to get at least one school counselor. Every school is going to get, you know, these different staff positions. And then again, adding additional funding from there.
This is critical to address equity in our city, because we're talking about this vicious cycle. This vicious cycle is largely happening in Black and brown schools across the city, neighborhood schools that have seen both their neighborhoods where property taxes are not going up. And so schools are not getting more money through that system of funding, but also through this enrollment based system. So you really have schools sort of losing money out two different doors, as well as students. And you know, as we're thinking about a school closure moratorium about to be up in the next couple years, it's really crucial that we start to address schools that clearly have lessening enrollment before we end up with another situation where we're seeing multiple schools close. According to Chalkbeat, with this new formula, all schools would get a principal, assistant principal, core classroom teachers, at least one counselor, a clerk, money for professional development, custodians, engineers, security, lunchroom staff, before and after school programming. That's all schools based on the formula. Then you also mentioned some of those additional resources, and that may be tutoring, more counselors, more support for English language learners, social emotional supports, restorative justice coordinators, and the like. And so this really is not only big news, but very exciting news. When we sat down with Mayor Brandon Johnson, when he was then, you know, commissioner running to be the mayor, you know, he talked about his own kids and, you know, what was the reason they weren't in their neighborhood school. And it was a thing I had heard from parents growing up, is that their schools didn't have the resources they felt that they needed, and they felt they had to send their kids somewhere else. And because of those things, he talked about how much he wanted to fight to get those basic resources into to make that the status quo across schools in the city. So to see the school board, as it is currently constructed, voting to move in that direction, it's a big point.
Well, and as you say, the school board as it is currently constructed. So there's sort of like two elements to this conversation. One is sort of like the what is actually happening to schools, which, you know, we just kind of laid out of like, this is kind of what it's supposed to look like. But two, I think politically for Brandon Johnson, you know, we have basically seen that Johnson, who is a former CTU organizer, you know, has really been pushing for, frankly, pretty big changes to CPS while he still has a fully appointed school board, mm-hmm. which will not be the case after the November election when Chicago gets a partially elected school board. So between, you know, again, changing a funding formula, ending the contract with CPD and CPS.
The complete overhaul he made at the very top.
Right. Really replacing most of the board members. Also, the resolution that the board passed earlier this year, promising to focus, sort of pull focus away from charter schools, bring more focus to neighborhood schools. Again, no charter schools sort of slated for closing immediately, but just sort of shifting philosophically. I think, you know, he's really trying to get a lot done here. And I will be really curious to see how much remains when half that board is elected by the people of Chicago rather than appointed by the mayor.
One more article that came across our desk that we want to get into. Obviously, we are in wedding planning season. A couple of weeks ago, we were talking about bachelorette parties and places to go, things you need for it. In our newsletter a few weeks ago, we ran, you know, best places to propose, whether you want private or that big public viral spectacle. Now the folks over at Chicago Magazine have put out a guide to honeymooning, but out in the Chicago suburbs, right? They did not take the layup of, you know, places to go in Chicago. And that got us thinking, you know, my first thought was chuckle because I'm an arrogant Chicagoan. But Simone, it got us thinking, like, what do people need for a honeymoon? Like the average honeymoon, what are folks looking for?
Yeah, I think this is a great question. And right. So the premise of this article was basically like, the most popular honeymoon destination is Hawaii, right? You want sun, sand, resort, right? That's what people think.
And people do not want you there.
Well, or like Mexico, right? That you think of that like resort
sort of getaway. Sun, maybe a little beach action or some type of outdoor activities.
That is what most people think of when they think of a honeymoon. But the premise of this is like, well, that's really expensive. Like, yeah, it's really, that's a few grand that you are going to put down to make that happen. And so, you know, can we find a less expensive option out here in the burbs? And so Chicago Magazine, what they did is they emailed a bunch of suburban chambers of commerce and said, hey, what is there to do for newlyweds in your town?
But again, they didn't pick like Naperville.
No. So we're looking at like LaGrange,
Alsip,
Whiting, Blue Island, which I think is pretty good.
Do you think?
Well, I think, right, so like some of the stuff that folks wrote back with are sort of, you know, things to do. So like in Blue Island, for example, they mention the Lyric Theater, the old Western Historic District, you know, lots of different dining options. Although I will also point out that they also include the Beverly Arts Center, which of course is actually in Chicago. Not in Blue Island, but you know, we'll give it to them. We'll give it
to
them.
You know, they close. You just come over a little bit, but yeah.
And then the articles also include how much it would cost to travel there and like mm-hmm. where you might stay. So for example, it costs $11 round trip on a Metro Electric and you would pay $69 a night at nights in Calumet Park. I don't know, Jacoby, like what, like this, to me, this is the question is like, what do you need sun, sand, resort, five-star dining, like five-star, you know what I'm saying, like high-end mm-hmm. fine dining, or could you, can you celebrate your, you know, can you celebrate anywhere?
The answer is no. You can celebrate anywhere. It is like every other part of, you know, the Merritt Industrial Complex. You know, that is what we are fed, what we are taught we are supposed to want. But like if you and your person agree that y'all just want to save money, sort of kick it close to home or go to a small suburb outside of a big city, like to each their own. But to me personally, like we were saying in the bachelorette and bachelor party conversation, I'm not spending money on that. I'm not spending money on a wedding. I'm not spending money on a lot of things. But the honeymoon?
Yeah.
The point where we can just go by ourselves, get away from the work and the drama and stuff. This is the place I am spending a lot of money or at least spending some money saving up. And so at least in my equation, I understand the frugal part of it. You know, I am trying to be frugal at every other part of the journey so that I can splurge here. But I also understand that it is not for everyone. But outside of the city of Chicago, I was thinking, you know, some of the places they picked, I understand low cost, but like, you know, I feel like Orland, for example, like Tinley Park, you can get an amphitheater, right? You get golfing, you can get like some pretty low cost, like nature reserves. Like, you know, they might have been able to maybe sneak in a couple of extra options.
That's kind of what I was thinking too, is like there are some, you could do, right, like a road trip honeymoon in lots of cute places near Chicago. I'm thinking back to our I'm thinking back to our fall getaway conversation. We talked about like Geneva, right, in Wisconsin. That would be something that I think is a little, feels a little bit less like you're commuting, you know what I mean? And you're taking mm-hmm. a trip. I think that's the other thing about the concept of like a suburban honeymoon to me is like, there are people who make that drive to Chicago every single day from Des Plaines, for example. You know what I mean? Anything that is like commuting distance, I think is maybe a little too close if the mm-hmm. point of the honeymoon is to get away.
But like you said, you get on a train, it might make you feel like you did a little bit of road tripping. And again, I understand that the purpose of the article was to highlight being frugal, cost saving measures. How can we get a little bit of easy transit, a low cost stay, but also get some nature and some activities and some good dining. And all of these places have some of those options. I do think just a couple of towns over, you know, like Michelle is talking about Bolingbrook, right? You got Waterfall, Glen Forest Preserve, the Forage Adventure Zip Line, and IKEA out there, right?
And so, IKEA, you can have your honeymoon fight too, I guess, if you want to do that too. Like it's part of it. That's also part of the experience, as I understand.
I ain't got no time for that. I'm gonna be off the back. I'm gonna be too relaxed for all of that. And so, no, I get what they're saying, and maybe our options, maybe even get away from it because you know your Orleans, your Naperville's, even your Bolingbrook's. Maybe the money starts, you know, adding up there.
I also think too the other the suburban casinos I think are a nice touch. You know, maybe. I will be curious when Chicago's casino is fully realized. Like, will that become a honeymoon destination? Will it become a bachelorette party destination? I don't know.
It will become a divorce destination for sure.
Oh, no.
For sure.
Oh, no, Jacoby. Oh, no.
I want to give a huge thank you to our executive producer, Simone Alisea. We talked elections. We talked school board and also honeymooning, not in Chicago, but, you know, around Chicago. I appreciate you making time as always.
Thanks, Jacoby.
For more news and events, head over to our website, chicago.citycast.fm. Today, I've got a nice list of some of Chicago's best storytelling shows for you. While you're there, subscribe to our daily newsletter, Hey Chicago. Of course, I got some good news for you. This Thursday, Respect the Mic, one of my favorite open mic series, is back at Positive Space Studios in Logan Square. They got live music, poetry, storytelling, and more. Sign up starts at 7 o'clock. We're going to be back here bright and early tomorrow. Thank you for listening. We're going to talk to you then. Peace. But if we're going to be in the Chicagoland area, you know, I don't know. I like to get my weed from Blue Island. I'm not trying to get my honeymoon anyone there.
Again, that could be part of it.